Thank you. Like you said, I'm Kim Rowdy, and I do now work with tobacco, but my heart a little bit is still in this project with climate change, so I've been working with the Utah Environmental Public Health Tracking Network still to make sure that this project follows through and gets finished. So I'm going to be talking a lot about my experiences with EPHT. And so today I'm here representing EEP and not tobacco. So I just wanted to clarify that real quick. I just want to start out with how we came about with this project. The Utah Environmental Public Health Tracking Network is part of the national CDC tracking network. And the network is made up of a bunch of states that are funded, but in the network itself, they have a lot of content work groups. And so we've been participating with the Climate Change Content Work Group, which is pretty new, and we became interested. And a big goal of EPHT, or the Public Health Tracking Network, is to make data available to other people to use it in a good way. So we track a lot of environmental and public health outcome data, but we manage so much data that just sits on our computers that we're really making an effort to make it available to decision makers and people who can use the data instead of keeping it to ourselves. Eventually we want to do more linkage studies, but as a state agency we aren't allowed to do research. So we decided to put together different profiles using our data. The first profile booklet that we put together was a child health booklet, and that was well received in Utah. We're still working on disseminating it, but once we finished that, we decided that we really wanted to do something with climate change, as it's an issue that isn't well understood in Utah, we don't feel, and that a descriptive study, not trying to link anything together, could be well received in educating people in Utah about climate change and the potential health effects that it has. And so that's where we decided to go in doing this. I have no relationships to disclose. So we decided that we needed to come up with a plan of where to really begin. And so that's mostly what I'm going to go through today, is where we began. We're still working on the process. We're putting together the indicators, and I'll get to that later. But I really wanted to go over how we got started and where we've come so far. There's so much to be done in climate change. There's so much to know. There's so much to do. And we weren't climate experts. And so we had to spend a lot of time going through the background. And that became one of our weaknesses as we tried to move forward with the project, is we hadn't spent enough time getting to know the background of climate change. And so we really delved into understanding Utah's climate regions, making good partners and contacts with the experts, and then selecting the indicators that would be appropriate for our profile booklet. One thing that we really needed to remember, especially as we went out to look for partners, is that we needed to make clear the purpose of our project. We were not doing any sort of analysis. We weren't trying to put linkages together. But people hear climate change and health, and they get really, really excited about drawing connections and showing people that they're related and we need to do something now. And that wasn't the purpose of our project. And so we found that it was really important to make sure that anyone we worked with understood that we were just doing a descriptive profile. We weren't trying to draw any sort of conclusions. It was to inform the field of climate change in Utah and hopefully lead to better, well-informed analytic studies. And so we needed to make sure that everyone we talked to in our program, there were about four of us working on this project, we all needed to be on the same page. We would get excited and start trying to get off on spokes, and so we needed to bring it in a lot. But we needed to make sure that all of our partners were on the same page. And it proves tricky. And a big key to that we found was making sure that we were very clear to them what we wanted. In talking with potential partners, we found it essential to have a clear purpose on the project that we could, it sounds pretty obvious we have a clear project purpose, but we needed to be able to describe that to them and what their role was within the project. A lot of people wanted to take on more than we were ready for them to do, and some of our partners just couldn't do anything until we gave them a specific what we wanted, what we needed, and how we expected them to do it. And so it was a really interesting experience for us working with different partners in climate and in health to realize what people were just going to take off and, you know, do their thing and be awesome, and they could catch the vision really quickly, and what partners we had to really describe, this is what we're doing, this is how we see your role, can you do that role for us? But we made some really good relationships that we're still working with and defining, and hopefully will turn out really well for us and them in the end. So the first thing that we need to do as tracking and as health was understand climate. We were coming in with no real expertise, obviously. And so we went to our partners hoping that they would have the expertise that we needed and they would just inform us. And that wasn't going to work for the partnership that we wanted to have. They really wanted us. They were happy to give us resources and referrals, but they really wanted us to understand climate for ourselves and how we saw it relating to the health indicators that we were trying to bring together. And so like I mentioned before, it was a real weakness in our project as we were getting started, is we didn't have enough background information, and we were trying to spread it out too much among our program. So like I said, there were four of us who were really working on this project, and we tried to split up the background research because none of us really had enough time to dedicate all of our time to climate change, and it was not working very well. We each read about a fourth of the articles that we collected, and when we came together thinking we could inform each other and come up with this comprehensive whole, it didn't work out that well. So we decided that we needed a climate change dedicated intern, and that took a lot of time to get going through our project. And when we hired one, she was really great for about 3 or 4 months, and then she got hired into our program and got other duties and then couldn't concentrate on climate change anymore. And so now we're again looking for a full-time climate change intern, usually a student that wants to work for free or doesn't want to but is willing to work for free. And so that's created a little bit of a weakness in our profile again, as we're now having to start again with finding somebody and then indoctrinating them with all of the climate change background information that we found essential to have, but didn't have that expertise within our program. But it's moving forward. But so the four of us who are working began to understand climate and what it meant in Utah. And Utah has four climate regions, which is pretty interesting. They're pretty different. We have the desert, which is 33% of the state. We have a steppe climate, which is 40% and the most extensive, and it's in our transitional places between the mountains and the valleys mostly, and it's a lot of grasslands. But then we have the undifferentiated highlands with 24% of our landmass, and it had a lot of large variations in temperature and different things like that. And then we have humid continental, which is only 3% coverage of the state, but it contains our largest population centers, which we found we really had to look at where does our population live and not just where are our largest climate areas. So it's 3% of the state, but it's a thin belt that runs north-south right along our I-15 corridor, and it has, I can't remember the exact number, but it's about 85 to 90% of our state population is in that belt. All three of our metropolitan statistical areas lie within that area. So we really had to look at, you know, not just what are our climate regions, but what climate regions are our decision makers going to be most concerned about. And that was really helpful too with finding our experts. I talked about making partnerships and getting people, and that was really key. We found especially in deciding on our indicators, was finding the experts in our region and in our area who were willing to work with us. And we found two really great resources. One was a climatologist at Utah State University, Rob Davies, and he's been really great to work with, but he was one who's like, I have all these resources and I'm happy to talk about it. And he gave us a lot of really good ideas, but he really wanted us to read and get the background information so that we could sit down and have an informed, deep, really good conversation about climate change and health. And so he's been really helpful. And then we've also had a couple contacts at the National Weather Service, and one of my colleagues, Emily Stembridge, has been working with them, and they've given us, again, really great information, but they really wanted us to do the background information and find out what we needed, and then go to them and be like, we need this data in this way, can you give it to us? And so we found that our experts have been absolutely essential in informing us of where to find the background information and what background information they expect us to know, so then we could go back and get that expertise that we need in climate change, and then go to them again and move forward together. And so it's been a really interesting process with us, as a lot of our other partners that we work with in other data fields wanted to be the experts for us and just tell us what we should do. It's been really interesting to work with climate change, and it's been really neat to work with the climatologists who want us to be well informed so that we can sit down at the table together. So the climate change indicators is the section that I wanted to take the longest on, as this is where the bulk of our profiling we wanted to come from. So we wanted to do climate change indicators, but also health-related indicators, and put them in a booklet together so that they can inform decision makers, and again, eventually lead to more analytic studies that we'll bring together. And I know that those of you who are climate change experts probably have gone through all this, but it was a really new experience for us in Utah in environmental tracking to make sure that we were getting good data into good indicators and in the right way to present to decision makers and those who would then take our information and do more with it. And so we wanted, again, to make sure that they were specific to our climate region. And then looking at that, there were still many, many potential indicators. So we split it into two sections, the climate-specific indicators and then the health-specific indicators. And again, they interact and relate, but this is where we started to make lists. And so with our climate-specific indicators, we looked a lot of what was going on nationally, what CDC was doing, the indicators they were collecting and suggesting. We also turned to CSTE, some of the work groups in the CSTE groups were working on developing climate change indicators for health as well, and then also with tracking in the climate change work group. We looked to them to see where were they going with their climate change indicators so that we could be comparable in the future as well. So in gathering our information of what indicators we would collect from others, have our partners and our experts prepare for us, and also new indicators that we would create ourselves, we were hoping to make them nationally consistent so that we could compare with other people and that we could create trends later on. And so the main climate-specific indicators that we came up with were average temperature, including and going into more the number of days over specific temperatures, the maximum, minimum, and diurnal temperatures. We wanted to look at heat waves, and this was another one that we needed to work with our climate and weather specialists with, is what is the standard definition of a heat wave. We had an idea, they had another idea, so we decided to look at what's been done, what's published, and inform what we would set as the standard definition of a heat wave. We looked at temperature inversions as well. That was a study that our asthma program at the Utah State Health Department looked at temperature inversions and air quality. And so we decided that that is another way that climate change could impact Utah health, is asthma and different things like that. So we were looking at temperature inversions, of course, extreme weather conditions, and we needed to define those as well. And that was one that we needed to look at for Utah, is what are the extreme weather conditions that we need to focus on and that affect us the most. In some of the national arenas, they talk about algae blooms and different things like that, and that just wasn't realistic for Utah. We don't have coastal areas. It's not a big deal for us. Well, algae doesn't make our top 10. But wildfires is a big one for Utah, especially in our dry summers. And this past year was interesting. We actually didn't have as many wildfires in the past because we had a really wet winter and spring, and our wildfires just didn't. So it's been interesting to look at what's been going on presently with what we're trying to study and get trends on. Drought and the longevity of drought was an important one, especially in our desert regions. Flooding was a big issue for us this year as well, and to look at that was really important for Utah. And we also need to look at wind and wind patterns to look at how that's changing and affecting Utah's health as well. We also looked at average precipitation, extreme one-day precipitation events, snowpack, and also avalanches with that. And that's kind of our target group of we're still working on getting all of them created, but those were our climate specific indicators that we were working on. And then kind of a bridge indicator that was affected both was air quality. It's something that we already track in Utah as part of our Utah Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, but we thought it was very important to highlight air quality and how that will affect health in Utah. It's a really big issue in our state right now, so we thought if we could highlight that, we can catch the attention of a lot of people who are already interested in air quality issues and tie it into the climate change issue as well. And then our health-specific indicators we worked with our experts to look at as well, and it's been really interesting to kind of branch out and see there are a lot of things that are obvious and are in the literature and others that we're still trying to pull apart, because once you get going, it kind of can keep going and spreading, because this leads to this and it can lead to other diseases. And so we're really trying to focus it in on what are important health indicators that decision makers in Utah would be interested in. So we have a couple of vector-borne diseases. West Nile is a big deal in Utah with our mosquitoes and has a direct tie to climate. Hantavirus isn't as big of a deal now. It was a few years ago, but that's still a hot topic that people would pay attention to. Allergic diseases, heat-related illnesses, and specifically looking at ED visits as an indicator for that, but we're still looking at if we can find better resources to measure heat-related illnesses. Hypothermia, cold-related injury, especially in relation to natural disasters, going back to the climate-specific wildfires, drought, flooding, those type of things to tie it directly into our climate. Asthma is a big one as well, and then other related potential infectious diseases such as Lyme disease and others that come up in Utah, especially in our summer seasons and hunting and stuff like that. So this is still a work in progress. We tried to look at indicators that we already had available or that other people had already available as well, so we didn't have to create as many and they could be consistent across the board. But we're still looking for feedback. If anyone has great resources, we're still open as we develop our indicators. But we're really just getting started, and I just wanted to lay out a little bit of what we're doing in case other people are in the same position, where we're health specialists trying to delve into climate. And so this is really where we felt a strong way to start was. But with that, I'll open it up to questions. Yeah.
Thanks very much. This is a great presentation, and thank you for making the effort to be here and to engage in this community, and hopefully you'll come back with a lot of resources that can help you out in the future.
We're hoping, yeah.
I was just wondering, can you say something about the way you strategized and planned your outreach for these indicators? Did you, because you've mentioned a lot of target audiences mm-hmm. and decision makers that you want to get these indicators, what sort of planning or what kind of plan do you have to publicize this to, connect to the people who might use it?
That's always a challenge for us. We're a small little program tucked into our health department, but we've created quite a network with our data partners with Environmental Public Health Tracking, and so that's a big focus for us, is to give our data back to the people who gave us the raw data, and that's typically like our Department of Environmental Quality. We get a lot of it from I'm trying to think about hospitalizations, and but we also try and take it to the EDO, our executive directors at the State Health Department, so that they can then disseminate it to groups, and we bring it back to national content work groups as well. But we don't have a good plan. That's something that we're still working on, as we're developing all these, as we think these are the people we need to reach. We will definitely have a press release and get it out in the media, but we're still working on a plan to disseminate it to the right people. We do send it out. We have a listserv for people who are interested in our tracking network and decision makers specific with environmental. And so we mail out the physical copies of the booklet once they're printed to our list of people that we have there. And then we also send it out electronically and make it available through our Utah. We have the IBIS system, the indicator-based public health system for all of our state indicators, and so we try and make things available there because it's a statewide portal. It's not just an environmental health data portal. So, yeah.
You mentioned it's going to be done as a booklet, and I'm just wondering why you decided a printed form, or is it going to be online? Or
it will be online as well. We're hoping with the indicators that we create on our IBIS system, we have EPHT indicators that are categorized, including all of our water, air, the hospitalizations, all that data. We'll make available a climate change module. So we'll put our indicators up online as well once we have them created and validated. But we decided to go with the print booklet partly because of precedence. We did the child health booklet and sent that out. But also we wanted something physical and then an easy-to-read presentation that we could send it to people and we could reach a broader audience rather than just the people coming to our website looking for data in our indicators.
Thank you.
Sure.